Blog Talk Radio.
The motherfucking saga continues.
Yo, yo, what's up, world? It's Badass Thuggin' like I usually do. And you better turn it up, bust some speakers out, cause we off the motherfucking cuff. You dig how we do it? Dog Pound Gangsters 2000 and beyond. Blech.
What's up with it, y'all? Man, don't change that down. This your player partner, the legendary Cocaine. And you tuned in live to Off the Cuff Radio. Better not touch that down. Wait.
Yeah, this is Cassidy, the hustler. And right now, you listening to the Guillotine. Show them the respect they deserve, man. Off the Cut Radio, man. Y'all already know how they doing it, man. I need y'all to stay tuned. They've been doing it for years. So show them the respect they deserve. And you heard it out of bars, mom. Easy.
Keep it moving like this. Yo, this your boy Rampage. You're not rocking with the best. With Off the Cut Radio. Classic. History. Fix your face to all you haters. We off the cuff, baby.
What's up, everybody? This your girl, Bonnie Dollars, the queen of trap, representing Crenshaw, and you are now tuned in with Off the Cuff Radio. What's up?
What's up, y'all? This is Miss Irresistible, giving a shout-out to the live show on Friday nights, Off the Cuff Radio, and I'm live from the 704. Make sure y'all tune in for the blazing hot music.
What it ain't, what it do. Chilly Chill from that original Lynch Mob. Off the Cuff Radio, always where it's at on Friday night. West West, y'all.
All right, we at episode 598, live and direct of Off the Cuff Radio. Show sponsored by
Screwball Radio, Buddy Boy Entertainment, Da Vinci Cloven. I'm your host, King Eric, the media assassin. And I got my host T-Max with the facts on the line. What's good?
What it do, y'all? Another fantastic Friday. Another fantastic frequency of OTC is on the way. Shout out to our co-host of Fairlight, Sandman Lady Chinchilla. We are two away from that Super 600. Shout out to Dirty Basin Radio, DJ Sister up in New York. And tonight, ladies and gentlemen, we have a very, very special guest. We all go through our ups and downs in and outs of life, and sometimes it doesn't always go the way we want or how we plan. And it's all about being able to find that peace, that sanctity, that joy, and that triumph, no matter what adversary life may throw at you. This individual we have on tonight is a paragon of philosophical well-being, an outstanding optimist who's also a hypnotist. He is all about being that author of awesome that encourages all of us, no matter what in life, to live our very best existence to the fullest without limitations and overcoming any hurdles and obstacles that come our way. A beautiful mind he has, and his gift of gab, his written words are nothing but encouragement and pragmaticism for everyone. You can check out his page, Ryan the Hypnotist, on IG, and we have him tonight to share his amazing story, life journey, of all aspects of it. Ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, the amazing Brian Christensen. Welcome to Off the Cuff Radio.
Oh, thank you so much. That was an amazing intro. You're flattering me way too much. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Very welcome.
He prime time with Brian, these intros, man. They make you feel like a prize fighter coming down there.
I'll tell you what, it was a hell of a pumping up, I'll tell you that, yeah.
Man, Michael Buffer ain't got nothing on T-Max.
I do my best. Brian, this is we're glad we can make this happen. Obviously, we talked a while back, a month ago, about you coming on. You know, us coming across your page, you really, really, really hit home on a lot of levels in terms of really encouraging people to really overcome. Tell us all about it.
Well, my life has been a heck of a ride, to be honest with you. I found out recently that I have Asperger's syndrome and a couple other things going on, ADHD and bipolar, and that was something that I didn't know about myself until just last year, and I'm 48 years old now. Grew up in Kansas, and so it was very much a life where it seemed to work for everybody around me, but never me. Like, everybody said, oh, just do this, this, and this, and things will be great, and I'd do this, this, and this, and it just would not work at all. So my life has been spent, you know, trying to figure out how to make things work. And so, you know, after a while, decided to join the military, you know, left Kansas, ran away, tried to spent about 23 years trying to save the world, doing national security stuff, military, Marine Corps, and Air National Guard. Worked up in D.C. as a contractor for 16 years, doing, like, counterterrorism, counterproliferation work, that kind of thing. But after a while, I couldn't do the international military mystery stuff anymore. They had me doing more project management stuff, so it's time for the next career. So at the time in my life, I gotten divorced again, trying to figure out the dating thing. It wasn't working very well for me. So I started really looking into what's going on with me and working on myself. That was in 2019. And that's when I got introduced to hypnosis through one of these groups. You know, a guy was talking about, like, toxic shame and emotional baggage. I'm like, well, you know, Catholic, you know, got a lot of that. So did a session and just, like, really kind of cleared some stuff up, you know, took a lot of the weight off, got me really curious. So I got certified right around the time of the pandemic, completed my certification right before everything hit. So I had a lot of time on my hands there for a while and started working with folks. And realizing that this is something I kind of have a talent for. I really enjoyed being able to help people kind of dig into what's going on in their life and peel back a lot of the layers, really look at the deeper patterns that have been more pervasive in their life and been really kind of pushing things. And just taking a look at what that is and doing the work to restructure that and reframe that so they can actually live the life they want and be free, you know. It's all about getting yourself out of your own way so you can truly be who you are, you know, integrating yourself on all those different levels so you're finally on your own team instead of fighting yourself every step of the way. And as soon as you can do that, your life changes dramatically.
You know, Ryan, when we look at those type of situations in terms of how people are fighting that inner war with themselves, you know, Suicidal Tendencies had a song, you know, way back in the day called War Inside My Head, you know, which is very fitting for a lot of people who are always, you know, seemingly at odds with themselves. And a lot of times we understand when we reach challenges in life, sometimes we know what we have to do. The answer sometimes is easy, and it can be elusive. It's not always, you know, pinpointed. It's shapeless. It's elusive. It's opaque. But it's also a situation where we also at times know what we have to do, but it's actually coming to that self-actualization. And also that point of reality, understanding, being that candid with ourselves to understand where we're at and how we overcome. Through your studies and research of what you've done, what did you find about the human psyche in terms of, especially when we go back to some of the psychological terms like the id, the ego, superego, you know, the inner subconscious, everything that makes a person the unique being that they are, and how they're wired individually?
Man, that's a really big question. It's something that I've been, like, really digging into the past 4 years, really kind of figuring out how everything's really wired in there and how, like, our mind really does kind of, like, make sense of the world and how we act. As a hypnotist, I kind of break it down to just, like, conscious and subconscious, but you can also look at it as having, like, four different minds. You've got an instinctive mind, which is really concerned about, you know, just taking care of your physical needs. You know, it's the part of you that's, like, dodging softballs and driving you to the store and stuff like that. And then you've got your emotional mind. Your emotional mind is a really huge part of you. I think people don't give it nearly enough credit. And it's really concerned with, like, questions of value and questions of, like, interacting with people. It's that social piece. It's that part of you that guides you between good and bad, you know. And then you've got that, logical, rational mind, which is concerned about the outside world and the future and being able to figure out how things work in those really precise details. And on top of that, you've got consciousness. And that's the part of you that's, you know, kind of like watching the movie of your life play out, but it's also playing kind of ultimate decider. So one metaphor I like to use for my clients a lot is the idea of, like, looking at your mind as a company. You know, this is your Amazon.com. And so your instinctive mind is really like the worker bees, you know, your delivery drivers and the guys in the accounting department and stuff like that. You could look at your emotional mind as like the middle management types, you know, the guys that are working with the guys right there on the floor and kind of like their bosses and so forth and so on. You could look at your rational, logical mind as kind of like your senior management types. And then your consciousness is the CEO. So when you kind of look at things that way, your mind is doing a lot of stuff on its own. You know, 90% of the time, 90% of your life, you don't really do anything on a conscious level to make that happen. It's just kind of just naturally happening, right? You don't have to do anything special. If you decide to get a beer, you get yourself up off the couch, walk yourself over to the fridge, open the door, magic happens, and you've got a beer in your hand. You don't have to think your way through that, right?
Right.
So if 90% of your life is being run by these less than conscious parts of you, you know, those three lower levels of your mind, getting that right is incredibly important. You know, making sure that those levels are working really well with each other, making sure that they're all on the same team is really, really important because they're driving so much of your life. And what a lot of people, I think, don't recognize is that there's more than, like, it's kind of like there's more than one kind of truth, right? Like, the output of your logical, rational mind is concerned with facts. You know, is this true, is this false? You know, 2 + 2 = 4. But your emotional mind is asking questions of values, like, is this good, is this bad, is this the right thing, is this the wrong thing, right? America was founded in 1776 is just a fact. It's true or it's false, right? What that means is entirely emotional thing. So I think that one of the big mistakes we make is assuming that there's one kind of truth and that's a logical thing rather than the emotional thing. They can both be true at the same time. So I think that one of the things, you know, you talked about people who were dealing with like suicidal ideation, people who have been in some really dark places, it's hard to accept that that's where you are. And so there's a tendency to want to run from that truth. I think that's one of the biggest and hardest things to kind of come to deal with, to face that and say, like, that's really, yes, where I was and where I went, where I was. You know, it's not easy to do. It takes a lot of bravery, a lot of will, a lot of strength to be able to face that in yourself. But it's necessary if you're going to work yourself through it. You know, you kind of have to accept the reality that that has truth to it. Even if you don't understand why, even if it doesn't make sense on a logical, rational level, there's a reason why that is true. And so for anybody working through anything, go ahead.
As I was going to say, which is what we call, in psychological terms, hitting rock bottom.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of and having to understand it. You know, and coming to that. Go ahead. I wanted to finish my thought after you finish yours. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, and it's really not necessarily having to hit rock bottom. I think it's just a certain point you got to kind of, like, you're faced with the reality of, like, what you wish was true about the world, what you wish was true about you isn't true. Like, and that doesn't have to be a rock bottom situation. You just have to recognize that things are not working out the way they quote-unquote should be if you were the way you were, the way you wanted things to be. I think that's really where people get started is they see that disconnect between the way things should be going. Like, I'm doing these things, I should be getting this particular result, and they're not, right? You got people who are, you know, very successful. They're making all this money. They got the looks. They got the cars. They got all that stuff, and they're not happy, right? The success was supposed to deliver that fulfillment and that happiness, and they're doing all the right things. They're checking all the right boxes, but they're not happy, and that's – you kind of have to take a look. It's like, I was supposed to be happy. Everybody told me I should be happy. It's like, why is that not happening, right? And it's that disconnect. It's recognizing that disconnect and being curious about that and having the courage to take, you know, go wherever that questioning leads you. That's really what gets you out of these traps.
Yes. And when you think about it,
it kind of goes into what society tells you what should make you happy. Just like I was looking at, I think it was a bio that Deion Sanders did. He said one of his main goals was to win the Super Bowl, He finally wins the Super Bowl in 1995 against when he was with the 49ers, and he ends up being, like, his most miserable. Like, he felt like he felt empty. But yet they were telling you that this is what you need to be happy.
Yeah, exactly. And it's that disconnect between what should be happening and what is actually happening. Like, that's that moment where you have to go, oh crap, like, I've got something wrong here. Like, I thought the world should be working this way, and it's not. And that's the inquiry where you start asking, okay, well, if it doesn't work like this, how does it work? If that doesn't make me happy, what will? Like, why isn't these things making me happy? Why am I not fulfilled? You know, and that's a hard thing to do. Like, especially like somebody like Deion Sanders that devoted so much of his life and so much of his identity to winning the Super Bowl and put himself all in to get that. to then be faced with the reality of like that was, you know, in some ways kind of wasted because you didn't actually get what you were hoping to get from it. Like, that's a really tough pill to swallow. You know, you really have to be willing to look at yourself at a very deep level with a lot of courage to say, man, like, I built my entire world and my entire identity on this assumption and on this basis that this is how things worked, and I was wrong.
Yeah.
Right.
And you know,
but once you're willing, once you're willing to do that, man, like, that's when the magic happens, because that's when you truly discover who you really are. That's what you truly discover, what does make you happy and how you tick and how to actually get what you really need in life.
Yeah, and that level of self-actualization, King, you know, Brian, it's real, because Dion actually did an interview years ago, and he talked about he was almost committed suicide, you know, because character of, because prime time, and we're old enough to remember Deion is prime time in terms of what, and I mean prime time, because there were two people, Deion Sanders and prime time. Prime time was just wild. And Deion will tell you that himself. You know, shout out Uncle Deion, you know, doing his thing. You know, and he's like, but it cost him, but, you know, he was doing just about everything that you could think of. You know, cheating on his wife, banging every pretty thing in sight, you know. And, you know, he had reached the apex of athletic achievement. To this day, in all of his achievements, and in addition to being the greatest corner ever to play professional football, he is the only athlete ever to play in a Super Bowl and a World Series.
Yep.
You know, and, you know, one of the greatest modern-day athletes, you know, in terms of Bo Jackson, Muhammad Ali, Ricky Henderson, Michael Jordan, LeBron James, any of the guys across any sports, you know, he's right up there in terms of pure ability. But sometimes it doesn't always, like you say, Ryan, turn out the way you want in terms of the happiness that you think you're going to, you know, have a return on from the investment you make in the things that are supposed to get you happiness. Matter of fact, Rick Rubin, who wrote The Creative Act, An Art of Being, you know, he had a video and he was talking about, you know, goals should not be set. And some people were like, what? How? But I got what Rick was saying, because when he's saying when you set goals, you're kind of limiting yourself in terms of where you're going with it.
Yeah.
And his simple philosophy was achieve what you can as you go along the way, but don't set goals. Always look to make the best of what you can do, but never set a goal in terms of that's going to be, because mentally it's like once we get to a certain place, once we get a goal, then we're like, what else is there? That's where that void comes in, because we're not prepared for anything else. It was like Robbie Fisher. For those that not see the documentary on HBO about him, it's over 20 years old, but it's phenomenal. And Ryan, you are a mental marvel, so you know the story about Robbie Fisher as well in terms of his descendants of schizophrenia.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you got to think, he was a grandmaster chef by the time he was 21 years old, and his mother said, congratulations, now what are you going to do with the rest of your life? Because Bobby had invested so much of himself, Robbie had invested so much of himself to doing it, but Robbie and that investment to play the game of chess, which is inherently makes you paranoid because of all the different moves and strategies you have to employ, it will definitely drive you over the edge. And from there, he did not prepare himself for the rest of his life in terms of how to deal with people. And ultimately, he had that mental descent into madness because he didn't know how to do anything else to do that.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of things in here that I'd love to talk about. There's some great pieces here.
So,
The first thing is like this pursuit of excellence, you know, and
yes, sir.
If you look at like any great athlete, you look at like any great entrepreneur, any of these people who've like really achieved something amazing, almost always you'll find a story where it's like they were growing up and there was an intolerable situation of some kind, right?
Mm.
You're growing up in a bad neighborhood trying to escape poverty, like, you know, or, you know, mine was like I just never fit in, so I had to freaking figure out how the mind worked to an extent that most people never have, you know. There's a pain almost that you're saying, like, this is intolerable, I can't tolerate this, I got to get the ways for this however I can. But they're possessed of some talent, They've got something unique about them that they're better at than anybody else. So they latch onto that thing and they just run with it. And the interesting thing about the goal is this wonderful external marker that you can point to and say, hey, once I hit that, I'm good. Right? Once I hit that, I've gone far enough. Right? But the interesting thing is that these people aren't running towards something. They're running away from that pain. They're running away from that intolerable situation. They're running away from their emotions, their feelings, their pain, right? So really, they're running away from themselves in a lot of ways. But the problem is you can't ever escape yourself. And so the problem is as soon as you hit that goal, as soon as you cross that finish line, you think you're done with the race, and so you stop running. And what happens? All your demons catch up to you. Right? So you got this situation where you have these people who achieve excellence, like Dion, right? He hit the Super Bowl, and what happened? He had achieved his greatness. He crossed that finish line. He stopped running anymore. All his demons caught up, and he hit that really rock bottom spot. You know, and you see the story over and over and over again where these people are profoundly insecure. They got profound fear. They got profound pain that they're running from. Their entire life is built around avoiding that pain by pursuing excellence. And the interesting thing about the pursuing goals piece is, it's not something you can really, the external world is not something you can really control, right? The only thing you can really control is your choices and your actions. So if you're basing all of your self-worth, all of your self-esteem, your identity on your achievements, then you're placing that on things that are outside of your control, right? You see all these athletes that are doing really well and they're doing phenomenal, and then they get injured and all of a sudden they can't play anymore, right? What happens? Down the hole they go. Right? Because they can't achieve that goal that they set for themselves. They had this identity, and all of a sudden that's taken from them. They don't have anything else left. They don't have any other way to run. Right?
Yeah.
So
right.
Once you're in that position where at that point, you have to sit down and you got to do that deep work, dive in that pain. You got to heal that. You got to fix that in some way. You got to address that. Because as long as you're possessed with that pain and that fear and that need to prove yourself, you're always running from that. And you don't really have a choice in doing anything else. You can't be anything else. Right, so you have to address that. You got to fix that in some way to give yourself more choice. Right, that's what opens up the opportunity for you to actually be you, as opposed to being the champion, being the athlete, being the entrepreneur, being the guy that's achieving the excellence, being the guy that's the flashy model or the popular or whatever. Right, being the grandmaster champion in chess. Right, only then can you actually be you, because at that point you're not running from yourself anymore. You're not trying to prove you're something that you're afraid you're not, right? And that's where the freedom really comes in, to then open up the aperture of, like, what else can you do? You know, Dion's done some amazing things since he finished his athletic career.
Absolutely.
Right? Things that he would not have gone down if he just, like, always been an athlete his entire life, but he was able to find something else because he faced his darkness. You know, he owned the fact that he wasn't happy. He owned the fact that that was an issue that he had. He worked through it. He did the hard work, and now he has a bigger, more full life.
And that's important. We look at it, you know, of course, finding his faith in God, you know, reaffirming his faith, you know, finding it. You know, one thing about it, King and Ryan, you know, and this is going to be a classic show. I got to preface by saying this because, I mean, already damn near 25 minutes in, and this is amazing what we've got. And, When you look at a lot of individuals, when I was watching the 30 for 30 You Don't Know Bo by Bo Jackson, watching it when he got that injury in the 1991 playoff game against Cincinnati, and, you know, he was thinking about it because, and I'm a diehard Raider fan, King and me both, well, me and my brother both. And we were just crushed when we found out that Bo, with that injury, would never play football again. And Bo was going to be the greatest of all time in running backs. I mean, he was well on his way. And to have his cut down 4 years in is just almost, it's just unfathomable. It is a crime that we were robbed of the greatness that he was going to give us and that he still had to give. And when there was a panel, you know, watching it, he said he doesn't watch much football because I think psychologically it's still too much. It's still painful for him to think about what could have been.
Because he put his mind, body, and soul into that craft. And then they tell you that you can't play anymore, that's like your whole life. Because you think about how he put football and baseball, you know, what he does as a profession, as his livelihood, as a part of his life. That's why you see a lot of these guys, when after sports, they either lose it, they get bored, they start doing crazy gambling, buying yachts. Yep. You know, they're trying
they're chasing that high.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's this question that I like to ask my clients all the time, because we run into this issue. It's like, okay, what part of you is you? Right? And this is a real big question that I think that people don't really ask, because we run through the world and we're experiencing our lives through our consciousness. So there's this idea that our ego and that consciousness is who we are. So when you've chosen this identity on a conscious basis as your ego identity of I am an athlete and that is who you are, what happens is that's, you have to like invest every, that that's, you've chosen that as you, as a quote unquote big you, right?
Yes,
but there's
sir.
More to you than just your consciousness, right? As we said, there's like four parts of your mind: instinctive mind, emotional mind, rational mind, consciousness. On top of that, you got your neurochemistry in your brain, you got your physical body on top of that, right? You
right.
want to get a little esoteric, you know, you've got your emotional body from like, you know, body keeps a score. If you're religious, you've got a soul. You talk about some woo-woo stuff. You're talking about astral bodies and emotional bodies and you know, energetic bodies and stuff like this. So you've got like 10 different yous. Like, which one of those is you? And when you step back and kind of look at it and you say, well, all of that is me. You know, all of that in the sum total is me. But if you created this little box in your conscious mind of like, I am an athlete, and that is the only thing you're allowed to be, like just that little box, that's all I can fit in, then you're essentially at war with yourself and trying to stuff this huge thing into this small little box. And if you don't fit, you panic. Right? And you lose your way because you defined yourself as that. And it often happens because, you know, you can't accept the rest of what you are. You can't accept the emotions you're experiencing. You can't accept how you feel, right? You're at war with that. You don't want that to be true. So you try to create another reality where that's not true. And so once that identity is invalidated in some way, taken away from you, like for Bo Jackson, or your career ends and afterwards it's like, okay, I'm not the athlete anymore, but you're still trying to make that identity work, and all of a sudden reality is not matching what you had created, things break down and you kind of go a little bit crazy. You know, you kind of lose it. You're lost because the thing that you created, the thing that should be working, stops working and you freak out.
And it's, you know, one example, I think, King and Ryan, when we think about Tom Brady, and it's like, this dude damn near fucked around and lost his wife behind it because he couldn't, you know, leave. And I'm looking, and as a Raider fan, you know, we're heartbroken about that game, but I respect greatness. Brady is the GOAT. And man to man is just as a respect thing. I would have told Tom, I'm like, dude, you got millions of dollars. You got six Super Bowls. Well, seven Super Bowls because he had won. But I'm like, dude, you don't have anything else to prove. You know, and the one thing about it I tell people is that I can't be the barometer. I'm not their barometer of success. I'm just a person who makes an observation. And I tell people one thing. Is that what you have, you're blessed to, because you are in the one percentile of people that not only get to the, when we look at it, we're talking about pro football right now. There are 32 teams with 1,696 players. When you look at division, three divisions, four divisions of college, you're looking at roughly on average about 4,000 to 5,000 players each year who graduate school. Less than 2.5% of them are going to make an active NFL roster across the board. And roughly even then, when you break it down in terms of tryouts between 32 teams, you have roughly 8,000 players between 32 teams who are trying out for a spot on a 53-man roster, which goes back to the 1,696 players. So, you know, this is something that not only did Tom Brady beat the odds as a 196th pick in, what, the 6th, 7th round, this dude went on to be the greatest quarterback that we have ever seen.
Here's the thing.
Go ahead.
You said something that's like, you don't have anything else to prove. And that really caught my ear, because what's fundamentally happening with a lot of people is they are trying to prove something to be true, right? There's a
right.
an emotional feeling that they have about themselves, this idea or this feeling like I'm not good enough or there's something wrong with me or I need to be something different. And so they embark on this quest to prove themselves wrong, right? I got to prove myself wrong by becoming the greatest of the greatest. Here's the problem. How do you prove a feeling wrong? How do you prove an emotion wrong? Emotions don't care about facts. That's not how they're built. That's not how that part of your mind works. It doesn't care about facts. It's not the question it's answering. So, you know, we've got this concept in hypnosis called the critical factor. It's kind of like the filter or the wall between your conscious and your unconscious mind. And what that part of your brain does is it kind of like filters stuff, and it's judging true and false based not based on fact, but does the stuff that I'm seeing match what I already believe about myself, about the world, right? So if you've got this belief of, like, I'm not good enough, then it doesn't matter how much success you have because that doesn't match I'm not good enough. So that part of your mind just ignores it. It's false by definition. It doesn't match what you already believe down there. So no amount of success, no amount of achievement is going to prove that feeling wrong. Just can't by definition. It doesn't work that way. Your mind doesn't work that way. But that's part of what drives these people so hard, is they're trying desperately to prove that part of them wrong, and they just keep on going and going and going and going because they don't have any other tools. That's what they've been told has worked. And so that's they just keep on going, right? So you say they don't have anything else to prove, but the problem is they still do. The problem is they're still trying to prove that part of them wrong, right? And all of a sudden the tool that they use for that is taken away from them. And what happens when that happens is they kind of go a little bit crazy.
Yeah.
They're just
desperately trying
to keep those demons at bay. Yeah.
Yeah, and the thing is, it's like, you know, like they say, the mind still wants to, but the body can't. Because of your mind, you still can't. You know, when we look at guys like, you know, Sean Combs, you know, when we look at what he's accomplished in the music industry, Puffy is unbelievable in terms of, and we're not talking about the recent issues. We're not going to talk about that in this. You know, we're just going to talk about, you know, just what he's done in the industry. The fact is that something that the work he puts in, and it's been legendary. This man has been known to sleep only 4 hours a night, and you know, I'll never forget what he said in the Source magazine back in '99. He said, the things that I have, the lifestyle I live, I have from working 12 hours a day, 7 days a week. And if you do that shit, you will be somebody. Shout out to Doug Young, Uncle Doug. We had him on the show a couple times, West Coast legend in the music industry. He was talking about a meeting. He saw Puffy going off on some record executives. Now, mind you, Ryan, this is before Puffy really becomes that dude. And he's cussing out a whole bunch of record executives. But Doug's saying, this motherfucker's going to be somebody, because he saw what Puff had in terms of that determination and that tenacity. And we can say this about Puff. One thing about Puffy, you give him a job, he's going to make sure that job gets done. He is legendary for making sure it will get done.
Yeah. And that's the thing about these people is you got these people who are highly capable and they're incredibly driven. They're going to make things happen. I mean, it's like almost impossible for them not to. Like, they're just straight out built based on their innate capability and that drive that they have, that fire, that passion within them, that demon that's chasing them, whatever that might be. They're going to get stuff done. It's like it's impossible to switch these folks off, right? Alex Hormozi is a great entrepreneur. I love this guy. He's a phenomenally capable entrepreneur. He and his wife are there in their mid-30s. They got like a couple hundred million a year. Phenomenal guy. Works harder than anybody I know. You know, 16-hour days, 7 days a week, almost, I think, you know, up in that area, right? He's a machine, right? And he's been very open about the struggles he's had with, you know, suicidal ideation back when he was younger. His whole life is about proving his dad wrong and just being ultra successful because of that. One of the things he said was, in the game of optimization, the most broken person wins. Right, and he says, you know, these people that are really, these people who are really successful, you know, the thing, it's not something that they have, it's something they don't. Their off switch is broken. You know, they can't switch off. right? They're just that driven, and they just don't have that capacity to stop. It's almost like it's not possible for them, right? And so,
right.
You know, the question I always have is like, okay, cool, interesting. Like, you're that driven. You're not allowed to stop. It's like, what are you running from? What is it? What pain drives you so hard that you can't stop? You know, and the interesting thing to me is, you know, we look up to these people who are so successful and so capable, accomplish so many things, and do so many greatness, right? Excellence in so many different areas, whether that's in music, whether that's in chess, whether that's in business, whether that's in sports, and look up to them and see how phenomenal they are. But I grew up in Kansas. You know, I'm around all these very simple, very normal people, and I see people who are so happy and so fulfilled and have great lives and great families and great relationships. And I'm like, why is it that the people who are so driven have such tortured lives? And the people who aren't pursuing stuff to that degree are the ones who are actually happy. You know, it's a really interesting question.
Yeah, it is. And when we think about it, people, to stay at the top, you know, people's whole thing is they're not going to be knocked off that perch and they're going to fight for it.
Absolutely.
And we, you know, but conversely speaking, because we're going to get back to that part as well, but when you also look at people like Barry Sanders, who was on his way to breaking Walter Payton's NFL rushing record, and he abruptly retired in 1999, you know, in the summer, you know, and there was some speculation about why he did it. We can speak on it. It's not fact. It was just speculated. Everything from, you know, there were some rumors that supposedly, and we can say this on air, we're not saying this to be tabloid. There were some rumors that he was just kind of feeling like Detroit wasn't doing everything they could to really field a winning team. So there was a rumor that he wanted to be traded to the Miami Dolphins, you know, and they wouldn't trade him. So he decided to retire. And Barry, of course, record straight saying that I didn't want to do it anymore. and Channing Crowder, he was a linebacker in the NFL. You know, Chris Borland played for the 49ers as well. I think Channing Crowder played for the Dolphins. Both of them, you know, had just decided. You know, Patrick Willis played for the 49ers. All these, you know, these guys played under 10 years in the league. You know, Patrick only played like, what, I think, 7 or 8. Chris Borland only played, I think, like 2 years. Channing played 5. And all of these, you know, these guys decided that they just didn't want to do it anymore. They said, either it was health concerns or they just said, you know, I've done what I've wanted to do. I've made my money, or I just want to do something else in my life to where it fulfills me. And people will say,
and go ahead. How strong do you have to be to do that? I mean, to walk away from something like that.
Absolutely.
You know, after you've dedicated so much time, so much energy, so much pain, and when you've got the world looking at you like every single Sunday, right? And just putting it all out there and getting paid bank to do it, and all the fame and the women and the cars, and this, you're on top of the world, you're a king, and to have the strength to say, this is not actually what I really want, like that's powerful.
Now, but there's also, you know, y'all, there's another situation, another anecdotal that is also why I think it can be reckless. This is where we get into the hip hop side of things. This was years ago. Dave Williams from, I think it was Allentown or Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. He was the number one. I think he was like the number 5 or number 10 recruit. He's a wide receiver in the country, and had a full scholarship offer to go to Michigan State. So he decides that he's going to put out a rap video, smoking weed, you know, and everything, and it's like. Oh, it gets better. It's because this is something I gotta go somewhere with this, because I want you, because I really need to get your thoughts on this as well, King and Brian. So basically, what it is hip hop journalism is what we do. Me and King are children of hip hop. We love it. We know our lane for what we do as journalists. We love our job. We love interviewing people like yourself. And the biggest thing we see with young people, because we talk to a lot of individuals in the industry, you know, this is our job to know what goes on. And one thing we tell young people, we are never going to dump on your dream to do it, but we also say understand what you're doing when you do it. So
right.
Obviously this dude makes a terrible video, basic suburban kid trying to act hard. Nope, smoking weed does not make you hardcore.
Right.
So ostensibly Michigan State pulls a scholarship. So his thing is, he says, I don't want to go to school. I want to be a rapper. And I'm smacking my head like, no! I'm like, Homer,
it's,
no!
It's
like,
fascinating, and it's just like...
Go ahead. There's more to it, but go ahead.
You gotta kind of wonder, like, what was it about rap and being a rapper and that image that drew him so much, right? Because that's a very interesting thing where you're not following your talent, you're not following your natural kind of abilities, you're not following kind of like what you're built for. You're going after a story you've been told in some ways. You know, it's like...
Say it again.
Right?
Say it again.
It's like you're not going after like what you're naturally built for. You're not doing what's natural for you in your God-given talents. You're pursuing a story that you've been told. You're looking for, oh, they get this attention. They get this kind of life. They get this kind of image. People treat them and they look at them a certain way. And I don't know why he decided that that was easier to get it that way, or what about that life, what about that image, what about that mystique, or, you know, I don't know how to say it exactly. That's, you know, that
archetype. The allure of the life.
The allure, yeah, exactly. Like, what was it about that that was so powerful to him that he's willing to throw away, you know, that scholarship? You know,
I mean,
he was on a path.
You get a free education
at it, right?
At the very least. You get a free education.
I know. Yeah, but let's be honest. None of the athletes are there for the education. That's checking the box because they're supposed to, and everybody says you got to. But they don't really care
about that,
most of them don't really care about that. They're for the athletics, right? So I don't
see
most athletes are not taking the scholarship in the school into account. It's more like you got to check that box in order to do what you really want to do, you know? So I can totally understand him throwing that away, but it's like, what was it about that image? What was it about that lore? What was it about that life that was so intriguing to him and so seductive to him that he's willing to throw everything else away when it's not what he's built for? That's the question I want to know. It's like, what was it that he thought he was going to get from that he didn't think he could get any other way?
But the thing about it, Ryan, that concerns King and myself when we see situations like this, even to this day, because this happened back in 2012. The problem is that when you look at how we came from the era of when you being an artist, you really had to put in that work. And the ethics don't change in terms of the legwork that has to be put in, the effort that has to be exercised, the boxes, the bases that have to be checked and crossed over. You know, when you're talking about being a rapper, getting notes, you're talking about you have to really, number one, be good at it. Number two, you got to get your music out there. Three, you got to connect with your fans with the music. You have to have a name. And the thing that bothered me about this was the tragedy. This kid didn't have any clue of how this shit works.
No.
In terms of, he didn't even have a mixtape out. He puts out a terrible song that he's talking about he's going to put out a record within the next, you know, that time he talked about he's going to put it out within the next couple of months or the next couple of weeks. But I'm like, dude, have you even thought about, I mean, this is not something that you just get into, you know.
Right.
On the road to prosperity of them seeing and being in the rap game, the music game, there are a ton of people that did not make it, you know. And he tried a couple more times, you know, trying to go back to school, but it's just like he kept going and dropping out. And my thing was, he had no direction. And that is the most dangerous thing we see with a lot of people. Like you said, that was powerful. What you said about they're chasing a story of what has been told to them that has been written, but it may not necessarily be authored for them. And the thing is, you know, you can't live your life vicariously through something that may not necessarily be your calling. And that's the thing,
right.
You know, if you're not, you have to know what works for you. And we see this a lot of times, the hoop dreams, you know, with a college, you know, football, you know, you have people that maximize their talents at certain levels. We're not talking
mm-hmm.
about in terms of what they, in terms of that ability, because you can have the ability, but sometimes your ability is one way. And it's okay to have one
right.
way of ability. That could be the one thing that works for you. Some people like Da Vinci, this dude was a painter, artist, mathematician, architect. Such genius is rare for that. But, I mean, not everybody's going to be that eclectic and ostentatiously, you know, talented with so many, you know, just do what works for you.
Yeah.
Get a little ahead of myself. But
sure.
the thing is that you have to, yeah, go ahead.
So the interesting thing about this to me is, like, you're 100% right. But I think that one of the problems that we have is that these kids that really drive themselves hard, you know, whether that's in rap, whether it's athletics and stuff like that, they're coming from really hard backgrounds. And
sure.
in that world, there's not many ways out. You know, I'm a middle-class white boy from Kansas. I went to, like, you know, I got a scholarship to the university and stuff like that. I'm an intelligent guy. I've got a lot of different options for me. Athletics was never one of them. I was never really an athletic guy like that. I was never going to be a hooper or a football guy. That just wasn't going to happen. But you
right.
talk to these people who are coming up from, like, you know, really rough backgrounds, they don't have, a lot of times, they don't have those options. The options are either criminal, athletics, or music.
Right.
Right? That's kind of like your list of things to pick from if you're going to improve your life. So if you don't have athletic talent and you don't want to go down the criminal road, music and art is pretty much your only bet. And so they throw in to the one thing that they think they've got a chance on, whether or not they've actually got the talent, right? This is the only opportunity. This is the only story that makes sense to me. This is the only option I see I have. I'm going to go for it because I don't have any other options. Nothing else would work. Nothing else would get me out of that. So it makes sense why
yep.
so many people try and so many people go so hard and so many, many people throw other talents away because they don't see them as nearly as viable an option to get them where they want to go. You
but
know?
It's funny,
so you're grabbing,
too, Ron. Yeah.
grabbing on to whatever you need to.
Yeah, and it's funny, Ron, because when we look at the multi-talents, you look at Master P, legend and
mm-hmm.
entrepreneur. Master mm-hmm. P, you know, wanted to try out for the show. And the thing is, for those that don't know, Master P was an exceptional basketball player. He had a scholarship to the University of Houston until he tore his ACL. And, you know, he ended up getting an inheritance from his grandfather's death from a hospital. They believe some malpractice student. That the $10,000 he
yep.
got was the seed money that was starting No Limit Records. But basketball was a passion with P that never got away from him. And, you know, he tried out, you know, in the NBA preseason with the Hornets and, you know, Raptors. And he was good. You know, I heard he was
mm-hmm.
like one of the last cuts on the team. And he did an interview in the Source magazine when they asked him about it, about why would he do it. And he was like, you know, because this has been my dream, and to play in the NBA. And he's like, you know, my last album, I'm going to make $47 million off of that. He said, you think I ain't got time to go play basketball?
Yeah. Well, you know, something that kind of strikes me about these guys is that a lot of them are just like, one thing that they have that most people don't is they've got the capacity, just like they just have the capacity to put in the work. They have
mm-hmm.
no problem whatsoever just grinding it out. They're not deterred by hard work. They're not deterred by pain. They're just going to tough it through, and they will just keep on going regardless.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not a question of dedication. It's not a question of discipline. It's not a question of grit. It's a question of, do you have the talent for the area you're going in? And so it really doesn't take these guys very long to find something else that they're good at that they can make, you know, they can make some money at, or that they can make a really difference doing. You know, it's these guys that don't have the humility to, you know, be honest with themselves about what they're good at and what they're not, what they were talented at or not. You know, you look at music, there's a lot of hard work in that. There's a lot of hard work, you know. So if you're really talented but you don't have the discipline, you don't have the grit to do the grind, you're not getting anywhere. But the other problem is you need that artistic talent. There's that something extra, that creativity, that flow, that gift that you need, arena, that if you don't have it, hard work is going to get you there. You know,
yeah.
you get these,
yeah, like
you know, I used to play like musical instruments and stuff like that. You get people who are incredibly proficient, like technically, in the craft, but the music doesn't have any soul because they don't have that something extra.
It's the feel, you know, and the thing about it, before we get into that element, go ahead, Kane, go ahead.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, too, you know, building with you guys, it's not really about talent. It's also mainly about drive, because there's a lot of talented people out there, but they got to have that workhorse mentality, and sometimes that's where how a lot of people get they stand out. It ain't really about how you present statistics on paper. It's how hard you work.
Yep.
One thing that it's a
winner take all game. It's a winner take all game. You know, stuff like athletics, stuff like music, stuff like art, that's a winner take all game. Right? As you said, there's only so many spots on the NFL roster, period. And only the best of the best are going to get in there. So it's not just grit, it's not just grind, it's not just the ability to hustle. You have to have the raw talent to go with it. When it comes to music, it's the same way. You have to have the talent and the ability to drive. You have to, you know, be able to work really, really, really freaking hard, and you got to have that natural talent. It's not one or the other. Stuff like business is different. There's room in the business world for so many different kinds of businesses. You don't need both. You can get by on one or the other, you know. But things like art, things like music, things like athletics, it's a different beast. Like, you have to have that combination, or you're never going to make it.
Yeah, you know, Dave Mustaine in his song of Mice and Men, I believe it was off the, United Abominations, I think it was off the United Abominations album, but he said, opening lyrics were, back when I was just 17, I thought that I knew everything, I could make it in this scene. Because he's talking about his early days, wanting to be a musician, to be a rising star that only gleamed, but all the answers disagreed with the questions held for me. And I was like, wow.
Yep.
You know, I said, I was legal now at 21. I knew which way the world should run. My God, just look at what I've done. Simply drunk and having fun. Looked for friends, but I found none. All alone at 21. I'm like, wow. One thing about Dave, that man can write some lyrics.
Yeah. And listen to what he's saying there. He's talking about, like, I thought it worked one way, and I found out so quickly it didn't. And here I am kind of lost because of it, right? And I mean, that's speaking to that gap between what should be and what is. But he's got that capacity, and he's got that willingness to look at that gap and acknowledge it and own it. And that's how he can win, is by owning that gap and then figuring out what's real. You know?
Yeah.
And it's like...
Yeah, but I mean... Go ahead. Yeah,
no,
I was just saying, it's crazy. Yeah, it's just crazy because, like you said, you know, we always think that things are going to be a particular way, but then, like you said, it isn't always like that. And when we look at how a lot of people, they think that because of one element of success, that can transition into another element of it, and it doesn't always.
Right.
You know, you can be immensely talented, you can have celebrity, you can have all these types of accolades, but the thing is, where your gift is really where your gift is. It's like with Magic Johnson, when phenomenal basketball player, one of the greatest ever point guards ever played in the league, and he still gets roasted about it to this day when he tried to do a talk show. And as talented as Magic was on the court, Magic did not understand those type of transitions in terms of what it means to be an entertainer, an aspect of, in a sense, being stand-up, because being a talk show host means you do have to be able to tell jokes and entertain the crowd. You know, when you look at Jay Leno, when he inherited it from Johnny Carson back in 1992, Jay Leno had already cut his chops as being a comedian, and he had gotten good at it. You know, so he had a natural transition. Arsenio Hall, you know, with his show, you know, he was great. You know, it's a situation where you have to know how your gifts are applied and where they can, you know, kind of be where your gifts are in abundance and how they can be applied in other aspects.
Yeah, and if you even look at, like, say, Michael Jordan, whenever he tried to do baseball instead of basketball.
Right.
I mean, just even that
right.
small shift, incredibly talented athlete, incredibly gifted physically, but he couldn't make that shift because just those subtle differences in how those sports were played meant that his natural abilities, his natural talents didn't translate.
Right. You know, it's something that, you know, it's something that and then we try to call people, and then people are going to say, they're going to say and try to take shots and call this, that, and the other. But it's like, the thing is, not everybody's going to be successful with everything they try to do, because not all of us
yep.
are built for that. But I always tell people, there's nothing wrong with making an attempt. You know, I always tell
yep.
people, there's nothing braver than being able to endeavor, because you got so many critics, I think, where we need more cheerleaders. But I also tell
yep.
people, too, a lot of times the people in your corner are also going to be the ones to tell you the situation in terms of the reality of where things are at, you know. And the reality
exactly.
is not everything is going to work out for you. And you see, you know, when we talk about music again, we have so many rappers who are trying to make it, it's oversaturated. And it's like, not everybody, you know, this game right now, back in the day, it was a select company of artists that could really get in and get a record deal. And now everybody,
yep.
through the advent of social media, now everybody thinks they're an artist. And then they
yep.
say you're hating because you think their music is trash. I'm like, no, your music is trash because you didn't put in the work in terms of getting good at it. You just want to get – I'm like, look, y'all just want to put out a video just so y'all could get seen on YouTube. That's what it was.
Yeah, and
that's what
and
it was all about.
Yeah, and there's this concept of using people for as mirrors, right? Using people to reflect back to you some kind of truth. And it's really important to choose the right mirrors. You got to have somebody, you know, you got to use people who actually know you and know what the heck they're talking about. You got to use people that have your best interests at heart, you know? If I'm talking
mm-hmm.
to somebody about what my baseball career is going to be like and he's never done baseball, he's not a good mirror. He's not going to be able to give me a good reflection. He's not going to be able to tell me truth, ground truth. And I think one of the big problems in the entertainment industry and the athletics and everything else, just all these spaces with so many promoters and so many recruiters and so forth and so on, you got a lot of people that aren't going to tell you the truth, that aren't going to sit you down and say, hey, look, you know, you got some raw talent, but you need to put in the work. Or even tell you the hard news of like, look, you know, you're not going to make it. You don't have the talent for this. This is not what you're built for. You know, and having people in your life who will tell you stuff you don't like hearing, that you don't want to be true, that you wish wasn't true, that you don't want to hear, but are doing it out of respect for you because they know you, because they want the best for you, because they're looking out for you, because they're trying to help you live the life that you really want to live. Like, that is invaluable. Having people like that in your corner, like, you're going to be able to accomplish everything you can in life. That's going to get you really on the path to what you're meant to do. You know, you got to find those people that are going to tell you the truth about who you are, what's going on, give you that honest assessment.
And that is so important because we see these situations happen so much where people, you know, everybody says, well, such and such is hate. And, you know, because they don't like, no. Hate is when somebody deliberately will try to sabotage your efforts in terms of they actually plot and plan for your downfall. That's hate.
Yes.
Hate is when people actively are trying to destroy your dream. It is not hate when
yep.
people have an accurate, you know, because this is where it comes into the issue of the truth, which some people don't want to hear, you know, because
exactly.
then people get butthurt about it. But the fact is, if I know you're, if you're a friend of mine, I'm not going to let you crash out on some bullshit, especially when I know
exactly.
the bullshit is coming, you know. And it's like, you know, it's when you see the situation and you know that this isn't, you know, the way, you know.
Exactly.
But some people, their whole thing is they don't want to be told nothing. But the reality is, reality doesn't change because your feelings don't feel that way. Feelings aren't facts.
Yep. Yep. That's some truth there. That's, you got it. Like, facts don't care about your feelings. Reality doesn't care whether you wish it was true or not. It's true regardless of how you feel about it, right? And so you always have to align yourself with what's real. You got to align yourself with what's true to the extent that you can, right? And sometimes that means aligning with that emotional truth rather than the facts. You know, it's facing up the fact that, you know, like we're talking about early on, you know, I don't feel successful. I don't feel good enough. I should, but I don't, you know? And so recognizing that both of those things can be true, there's truth in both of those spaces, and recognizing when those things don't agree and doing the hard work to figure out why, like, that's when you're going to get the best results in life that you possibly can, right? Because you've got those guys that have the talent and they know that, and they've got that feeling and they've got that drive, and they don't listen to the people that don't support them because they know on a deeper level that they're right. You know, and that's really what makes some of these people great, is they ignored people that, you know, would otherwise know better because they had that deeper knowing, they had that instinct that's like, no, I'm built for greatness. I know that I'm right for this. And so they kept on grinding in spite of it. You know, so
that's true.
You got to be willing to hear the truth and whichever way it comes, whether that's from the outside in or from that deeper knowing outside and, you know, inside out.
Yeah. When you get in your, how do people normally, when they come to you for counseling and such, when you really do your introduction to people, what do you let them know about what to expect when you take that session with them?
So I do very, like, deep programmatic work. I don't work, like, on an individual session basis. It's more of a program. It's more of a... The idea is you're coming to me, you're not able to do the things you need to do to live the life you want to live for whatever reason, whether that's because you're kind of blocked and things are just not working at all in your life, or you're really good at one thing and the rest of your life is a mess, you know, whatever that happens to be. And so what we do is, this is all about exploring why. Your mind is doing this for you on purpose. Your mind is doing it. It has a reason. It's honestly trying to help you. And I think that's one of the things that people don't understand, is I kind of don't really believe in self-sabotage anymore. I don't think that's what's happening. I think when you're not getting the results you want in life, when you're fighting yourself all the time, what's really happening is there's a deeper need that you're not aware of, that your mind is actually making sure is getting met, and that's coming at the expense of what you want on a conscious level. So it's really all about, okay, let's get down into those deeper parts of you and ask it, why are you doing what you're doing? Because it has a reason. It knows exactly why. It's not hard to figure that out. Once we find that, then it's just the hard work of negotiating a new solution. Okay? And so it's all about taking somebody from a place where they're operating from pain or fear or a need to prove themselves, figuring out what drives that, fixing that, and then giving them that freedom of choice and that freedom of action that they don't have otherwise. It's about expanding that menu of options. Now, that may take 2 sessions, it may take 5 sessions, it may take 10 sessions. But you walk in my door, you sit in my chair, you know, we're doing this stuff over Zoom, but if you and I agree to work together, we're going to work together until we get you to where you really want to be.
And that's important, because people really need to understand it in terms of it. Now, when you look at other elements, when you get into the psychological, how do addictions play in terms of addictive personalities play into this as well? Have you dealt with any clients like that as well?
I don't really do a lot of work with addiction. Addiction is a very complicated, multifaceted thing. So in order to really do the work I need to do, you've got to be in a fairly stable space. So I've worked with a couple of clients that have addiction issues. It's more like, okay, deal with your addiction stuff with some other tools, and I'm going to work on these deeper issues that are kind of driving it. For me, addiction is... almost always one of 2 things. It's either, number one, the tool that your mind is using to mess up your life because you don't deserve the life you have. So it's a way to kind of keep you in a cage. Or number two, it's the coping mechanism, the self-medication mechanism you're using to make a miserable life tolerable enough to keep going. It's almost always one of those 2 things, right? But to be in that place, you've got to be in some pretty serious stuff. When you're talking about physical addictions, there's physical stuff you got to deal with. If you're talking about drug addictions, there's all kinds of things that go along with that. Alcoholism, all kinds of things that go along with that. And there's, like, environmental factors that you have to deal with. So to deal with addiction, it's not just a subconscious mind issue. It has to be a holistic like whole of body, whole of soul, whole of life approach. You got to get him out of that situation. You got to do all the physical detox. You got to like figure out where that's coming from. And it's a hard problem. It's a really hard problem. It's one I'm not really qualified to deal with. So when I've got people that are like that, I refer them out to other people. It's like, okay, these people are going to help you get past, over the hump, get you to a place where you're stable. Then you can come back with work and work with me, and we'll get you to where you want to be.
Yeah, that's a totally different piece right there.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, I wish that I could fix everybody's problems. I really wish that I could do the work that these people need. I wish I had a magic wand to make everything better for them. But, you know, I have to be honest with myself and with them. Like, this is not something that I'm really capable of helping you with. It would be irresponsible of me to say, yes, I can fix your problem for you. It would be irresponsible for me to take them on as a client and say, yes, this is the problem we're going to work on, because I can't help them get where they need to go. I can't give them the solution they really want. So I'd much rather give them to somebody who can, so they can get what they actually need in their life. You know, I've got to be humble about my own limitations and my own talents. You know, this is not something I'm good at. You need to see somebody else. Once that's taken care of, come back to me, and then we'll take care of the rest of your stuff, because that's where my talent and my gift lies.
And that's powerful. Go ahead, King.
Yeah, I'm going to make sure. I was seeing if anybody was there, because I think we had like a silent thing. I don't know. I think I pressed the wrong button or something, but we back.
Okay, yeah.
I was like, what did I do?
Technology is wonderful right up until it doesn't work right.
Yeah. Yeah, but I want to shoot this to you, man. Like, what are your thoughts on... It's one of the epidemics that's going on right now, and they talk, I saw this on the news the other day, and there's like a loneliness epidemic going on amongst men. Like, what do you think that problem started? Do you see it as an epidemic, or do you think the media is just, you know, over-exaggerating things just to, you know, put fears and confusion out there?
Epidemic among, in terms of what?
Loneliness men, for men, middle-aged men.
Man, I'll tell you, as a guy, I'm 48 years old. You know, I had my relationships end. I've been married and divorced twice. It's a problem. One of the things about men is that we bond and we create relationships and we form our connections through doing things together. And if you're moving into middle age, you don't have college anymore. You don't have school anymore, right? If you're a middle-aged guy and your job, everybody else there is married with kids and they've got their different lives. You can't connect with people. And so it becomes a very isolating thing where you don't have things that you can connect with people because you're not doing stuff with people enough. You know, you don't have that natural community. And so it becomes an issue where it's very easy to lose those connections because you don't have a way to maintain that and you don't have a way to create the new ones. So you have to sort of force yourself as a man to get out there and do more stuff. You know, go to the boxing gym, start doing hiking, getting involved in civic activities, volunteering even, you know, start coaching middle league games, you know, middle school games or what have you. Like anything that'll get you out around other people, you have to do that in order to have that basis to connect with people. It's a big problem. You know, too many people rely on technology as a substitute, you know, and it's very easy to start using that as a substitute for a real connection. But it's not the real thing, and deep down inside, you know it.
And that's real, Ryan, what you were saying, because we see so much of social media going on today with young people where, you know, when mm-hmm. we came up, you know, King's 40, I'm 46, we grew up in a time where going outside meant you were playing with your friends, you played sports, you were exploring, you know, you interacted. Hell, I mean, when it came to schoolwork, you actually did this thing called studying. So you actually had to read and research. And now what we're seeing with social media with the youth today is that in their mind, everything is – they're so inundated with these images that are exaggerated or outright false. But, you know, but they're believing that if you're not, you know, famous, you know, if you're not a millionaire by the time you're 21, that your life is a failure.
And that's not true. I'm like, y'all haven't even hit your 20s in terms of really understanding. The human brain is not fully developed until it's 25.
Nope.
So you're still trying to figure this thing called life out, even at a young age. You're still, hell, we're still, even being older, some of us are still trying to figure it out. So it's put such a distorted view in our young people's minds about what they think it really is. And like you said, they're living in a fantasy world of not really understanding, you know what I mean? It's like when we go back to rapping. So for all these young people out there, rapping is the easiest thing to do to get out there, get seen. You know, everybody thinks that their song is going to go viral, but it's like, you know, college and pro, it's like pro football. Not everybody makes it to the league. You know, not everybody's going to be that big star. You know, and that's the reality that a lot of these young people don't understand. You know, and then the thing about the entrepreneurs in the 20s, I read this article and I never forgot it. The rich entrepreneurs in their 20s is a myth. A lot of these entrepreneurs have really made their money well later in life. You know, Steve Jobs, Oprah Winfrey, all of them. They, David Geffen, all of them. They all did it later on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Jenny Iovine, Richard Branson. Yeah, I was thinking of the guy that owned Virgin Records, Richard Branson.
Yep.
You know, all of them, they started late, you know what I'm saying? But they had the cumulative wisdom, the empirical knowledge and understanding how they knew, what made it true to them and the world outside of them and how to operate. And that's what I think sometimes we see our young people missing. You have to make the mistakes in order to make the triumph.
Yeah, you know, and I think it's a really interesting thing. Like back in the day, back when we were all growing up, if you wanted to escape in a fantasy world, you had two options. You had books and you had TV, right? Otherwise, you had to deal with the real world in some way, shape, or form, you know? So the interesting thing these days is that it is so easy to escape from the real world into fantasy because there's a screen on everything. You've got a phone in your pocket. You've got the internet. You've got everything. And fantasy worlds are so easy to play in. Real world is hard. The real world's really hard to deal with. The real world doesn't tell you yes all the time. You don't get to win all the time. You know, video game, you can just find a video game that you can play that you can actually win at, and all of a sudden you're a winner. Real world's not like that.
And a cheat code. Don't forget the cheat codes.
And cheat codes. Yeah, exactly. Pay to win on all your little mobile phone games and stuff like that, right? So when we were growing up, we were forced to confront reality. We were forced to confront our limitations. We were forced to realize that we're good at some stuff and we're not good at others. We're forced to realize other people are better at this than we are. You know, we didn't have the ability to deny reality because that's all we had available to us. And I think that that's one of the things that we miss is that it's not just that these kids are inundated with all these images. They're also never told no. They're never told you can't be that or that's not who you are or that's not available to you. They never have to confront that reality that that's not who they are. They can live in that fantasy as much as they want.
One thing that stands out and what you said about the fantasies and everything, shout out to Sean Sotero, who authored the awesome Dummy Boy book about Tekashi and his gang, Tekashi 6ix9ine and, you know, that whole saga from beginning to end, from his four-way into rapping, ultimately his arrest, you know, the whole criminal trial. For those who have not picked that book up, go get it. And it's like with Tekashi wanted this fame as a musical artist, and he was trying to escape the harsh reality, like you said earlier, Ryan, of what a lot of these young kids grow up in. But then when he found out what he got himself into, dealing with some real goons in the New York streets of the Bloods, he found out it wasn't what he thought it was. And that aspiration to be an artist, yes, he had the hit songs. You know, he had popularity. He had a little bit of money, but when that reality came down and everything was going on and those criminal investigations came in,
he found out it wasn't like he thought it was going to be. And then ended up telling what he knew once he got pressed on it.
Yep.
You know? But he thought being around.
Reality always finds...
Go ahead.
Yeah. I said reality always finds a way to catch up with you. You know, you can only run from it for so long. You know, and it's going to find you in one way or another.
It does. In terms of you starting your, you know, IG page, which is incredible, what gave you the idea one day to go ahead and just, you know, just really do something, in our opinion, our humble opinion, is a service to humanity in the greatest way in terms of really giving people some light where we see so much dark going on?
Well, thank you. I really appreciate that. A big thing was, you know, I started my business in 2020, and I was really active in the men's communities back then, kind of the red pill space, a lot of pickup artist space, because I was focused on dating. And 2022, 2023, I really realized that wasn't the space I wanted to be in anymore. And along the way, in the past 4 years of being a hypnotist and doing all this work, you know, I've realized a lot of interesting things about how the mind works and how we deal with stress and how we deal with loss and how we deal with pain. And so as part of my kind of move to try and reach a new audience and try and do things a bit different, I decided to say, here's what I believe and here's what I found. Because I want to find people who want to work with me, not because they're trying to get dates and stuff like that, but who really want to do the deep work to make their life better in so many ways, you know, in a deeper way. And so my hope was by sharing these insights and these lessons I've learned, like number one, people maybe their journey's a little bit easier than mine. You know, these were all very hard won, very painful lessons that I had to pay a lot of blood and a lot of tears to get. And my clients had to do the same thing for me to learn those. You know, hopefully by sharing these, it turns a light on a little bit sooner for someone. They don't have to suffer as much in their journey. But the other thing is, you know, if you're reading the things that I write and it resonates with you, then we're probably going to be able to work well together. It's probably something, you know, that's your mind is saying, hey, there's some gold here. You need to start digging. And that's the kind of people that I want to work with. It's people where that resonates with them. They're like, oh, yeah, I understand this about self-sabotage. Oh, you're saying this thing about people who work really hard. Oh, you're saying this thing about, you know, people who hide themselves from the world. Like, that's me. You know, I write these things because they were my truths at one point in time. They're things that I had to realize about myself in order to get past all the things that I was in order to dig myself out of the hole, in order to drag myself out of my own personal hell. And so if those things are resonating for you, then I've been on that journey, you know, and I've kind of been through that, and hopefully I can help you get you to where you really want to be.
And that's important. For all of us, because we live in the world, how important is it for people to be able to feel like they belong? When we see, and now we don't want to get into too morbid, but we want to talk about it because it happens. When we look at a lot of these mass shootings that are going on, we're not going to try to get it into one reason because there are many. But when we look at a lot of them, these are individuals who either were psychologically troubled or they just felt alone and enraged. The pandemic obviously complicated a lot more of these issues of what was already going on, because people who were already on the fringe of that destruction, because they did not know how to interact publicly in a positive and meaningful way, and they were forced into seclusion, they came out angrier than what they were before. What do we do as a community to try to address these issues, and how important is it for people to feel like they do belong in society?
Man, really complicated question, really hard thing. I don't think that we have any simple solutions. Let's start there. I don't think there's an easy way out of this. If you're asking how important it is for people to belong, I think it is one of the most important things ever. You know, you talk about longevity studies and stuff like that, like, one of the biggest predictors of how long you live is how connected you are and what kind of community you have. Like, do you have family? Do you have community? Do you have friends? You know, if you don't, loneliness kills. You know, it flat out does, you know. After my last relationship ended, I ended up getting a cat just because I needed somebody, something around the house to keep me company. You know, it's a hard thing being alone. You know,
it is.
And these people who are, you know, dudes, not shootings, and you know, they're deeply wounded, deeply disturbed, in a lot of pain. And when you look at that pain that they're in, and the fact that they can't connect, and all the resentment they have, it's very easy for them to blame the outside world for the pain that they're in. And it's easy when you're in pain and you see somebody else to blame to want to hurt that back. You know, it's tragic. And I don't know if there's an easy solution because, you know, this world is not built to create unique, you know, to create authentic connection anymore. We don't do that.
Wow.
We don't teach that anymore. We really don't. It's all about creating the facade. It's all about being online. It's all about the picture. It's all about, you know, how many likes you have and so forth and so on. And, you know, nobody's going for deep, authentic, true connection anymore. It's tragic. And it's one of those reasons why I feel so lucky that I grew up in Kansas. You know, it's a very traditional, down-home, salt-of-the-earth kind of thing. And that deep family connection, those traditional sort of values, are what I grew up with, and I'm very fortunate for that because it impressed upon me that need to have real human connection, to have family, to keep those bonds, to keep them strong, to stay in touch, to be genuinely curious and care about other people and have people who are genuinely curious and care about you. That's really the foundation on what we have to build everything else on. You know, no man is an island is a saying for a reason.
Man, I mean, that's deep what you just said about the world is not designed for authentic connections anymore because we're living so vicariously through social media in a vacuum where we look at that quick gratification, but we're not looking at the genuine feel for things.
Yep.
You know, I mean, what you said, and I mean, even how stuff happens out there now, I mean, we look at even in the rap world how shit happens. You know, when, you know, Meek Mill got mad at Drake because Drake didn't congratulate him for his album going number one, and he felt like that was like a major flight. And he started dissing him. And I'm like, you know, I'm like,
either that or they'll be like, oh, how come is it you ain't, it's either that or they'll be like, oh, how come is you ain't follow me, bro? I'm like, I don't even know how this thing really works. I got your number.
Yep.
But we're in this place now where even ostracization is defined by one click of a button on social media. You know, disrespect is categorized by a negative comment. And it can even go, I mean, we look at a situation years ago that happened with Little JoJo and CC. And Little JoJo got out there and, you know, look, one thing about Chicago, we tell anybody, get in some Chicago beef at your own risk because it is not a good idea ever. But, you know, but, I mean, that situation went down the way that it did. You know, Lil JoJo dissing, you know, Chief Keef, and then the boy was killed 4 hours later. And we're like, I mean, it was just crazy. But, you know, it's like, but that situation, when it turned around like it did, it's like people have to understand, you know, in terms of the psychological makeup of things, because they will predicate themselves off of, you know, how much they can disrespect somebody that validates them as an individual. I'm like, no. Because number one, first and foremost, you should always respect other people. You know, even if you don't like them. Like they say, if you don't like somebody, either, you know, don't say anything at all. Because the problem is, the psalms behind that is a lot of people, the tongue is the hardest weapon of the mind to change. Because the tongue is a physical expression of what is going on in your head that is articulated through your mouth. And some people, they do not have that discipline of how to relegate it. And they think that they're doing something until something happens to them because they couldn't keep it under control.
Yep.
You know.
Well, we were talking earlier about how, you know, people these days don't really have to confront reality. And one of the things about being on the digital world and like that being your foundation is that there's no consequences. there's really no consequences to anything you do there. You know?
Right.
And so if you're coming from this world where you can do whatever you want and say whatever you want and there's no consequences, and you take that same foundational belief and you walk in the real world and start doing that to real people in real life, all of a sudden there's consequences because now you're in reality. And I think it's tragic that, you know, if your identity is based on this public persona or this fantasy persona you've got online, you have to defend that because that's who you are. So any small thing that doesn't align with that identity you've created is a threat. And you treat it as just as much of a threat as you would if somebody was pushing you or shoving you or actually, you know, calling you names and talking smack to you in person. You know, it takes that same weight. And it's stupid because it's fake.
But what have we also said, too? You know, well, what have they said about it, too? You know, that, you know, social media has given a lot of people courage to say things that they wouldn't normally say in person.
Yep.
You know, and that's that digital courage. We've heard of liquid courage, but that digital courage is something that eventually it
is it really courage if there's no consequences?
Yeah.
Is it really courage if there's no consequences? You know what I mean? And I mean, if you're saying stuff that's truly, you know, you get these people who are talking about like what's going on down at the border. Not to get too political, but they're saying like, hey, this is the reality of the situation, and you know, there's this fascinating thing you get with like on Twitter and online being able to amplify and convey a truth that wouldn't otherwise be seen. And I think that's a beautiful thing. And it's just so tragic to me that we use such a powerful tool to amplify and, you know, spread so much stuff that has no value and no real worth and no real impact in the world. And it isn't authentic. You know, I feel like those tools should be used to spread the truth of who you are, not the fantasy. And I think if we use them in that way more, I think not only would it be healthier for the individuals, but I think we as a society would do better too.
And that's the thing too, because when people, that's why I tell people, you know, and like, you know, me and King, we talk on air or we talk off air about this, about what people see online. We see a lot of these crazy conspiracy theories that go on.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you got people, when we look at, and I'm going to be that guy, I'm going to be that supposedly arrogant asshole of an academic. Usually people who subscribe to these conspiracy theories, a lot of times are not the most well-educated, informed people. And what they're looking for are the conspiracies to confirm biases and prejudices that they already have. That exist in them about the world that they live in. You know, their thing is, you know, we don't like things a certain, we don't like it, but and even if this is not true, then we will pay attention, you know, that we'll subscribe to this because it fits our narrative. It doesn't have to be true, it just has to be true to us.
Exactly. Exactly. They're looking for some kind of evidence that they can latch on to justify the beliefs that they already have. But, you know, the interesting thing that I find is you've got actually a lot of really highly educated and highly talented people that are talking about things that you would consider to be a conspiracy theory, but, you know, that they're actually pointing to the real facts. You've got guys like, say, Dr. Brett Weinstein that just put out an interview with with Tucker Carlson the other day talking about the immigration through the Darien Gap. You got guys like Mike Benz, who's a cybersecurity guy, used to work for the State Department, talking about this is how the disinformation architecture is put together. And all of a sudden, all this stuff that we thought, you know, was kind of going on behind the scenes, like, oh, here's some evidence for the stuff that we thought. So I think that there is, you know, it goes both ways.
Right.
It's about
the
discovery of truth of, you know, one way or the other. And I think that the difference between those two and the crucial difference is, if you're a conspiracy theorist and you're looking for proof of the thing that you feel, that's just trying to confirm your existing bias versus going out and looking at what's real and then trying to make sense of the facts. You know, I think that there's a lot of value in that second one. And unfortunately, I think we spend way too much time doing the first, just trying to confirm our own biases. I think, you know, the internet and social media and stuff like that is a great place to say, here's what the facts on the ground really are. Here's what reality really is. Let's try and make sense of it together.
Right.
But, you know, and like I said, that's always, like I said, that can always be a troublesome situation because people can't always celebrate, I mean, well, it's not celebrate, separate reality from fantasy. And that's something
yep.
where we look at it in the, you know, we look at it in hip hop, you know, in terms of how a lot of these artists are trying to live out stuff, you know, otherwise, you know, it's not true. Yeah, it's a gimmick,
mm-hmm.
but they think that to a degree, that's what it really is, and it's not, you know, but
yep.
you see a lot of people crashing out, you know, I mean, you look at, you know, Nicki Minaj's husband, he getting out there because he got beef with someone, and he, you know, talking about how he's going to do something to somebody, this, that, and the other, and I'm like, dude, I'm like, you know, talking about he going to do something to the Migos, and I'm like, dude,
mm-hmm.
you got to back up off
hey,
of that
man,
one.
It's like a... Yeah, you know how it is. People
yep.
be feeling themselves. It's kind of like, because today is like modern day WWE, man. That's just the way they treat the internet now.
Yep. 100%.
Everybody got a gimmick. Everybody has a character they got to maintain. But at the same
yep.
time, the difference between with wrestlers and real people, these wrestlers, they got to turn it off. Like, he's not going to be Hulk Hogan when he's pulling up breakfast in the morning. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
He's going to... When he's pulling his Lucky Charms in the box, he's not going to go, let me tell you something, brother. Let me get these Lucky Charms. He's
yeah.
going to be Hulk
well,
Hogan. These guys
yeah.
here, they tune the character 24/7, and this is where they lose sight of reality.
Yeah.
yeah.
Look,
yeah.
as we say in
well,
wrestling
like,
with the kayfabe, you got some of these people out here, you know, they watch too much social media, and then they develop a character. Well, let me back it up a little bit. So basically, you got people that are cartoon characters on social media, and people take it as gospel. Like, what was your man, Alex Jones, you know, with that joint. And Alex Jones was just, I mean, that whole situation was just, I mean, you look at what happened with Newtown, and he's trying to say it didn't happen, and we know it did. I mean, you talk about innocent children were killed, and this dude is basically saying, you know, this is, you know, and you got people trying to say, well, you know, then this whole thing about crisis actors. I'm like, what the fuck is a crisis actor? Please tell me. I need to know this.
Yo, these people come with the craziest stuff online.
And then Alex Jones in court when he gets sued, and he's talking about, you know, well, you know, this is just what I do, you know, because I'm, you know, this is my character. I'm like, dude, your character, you know, you playing a character has wreaked countless havoc and emotional toll on people's well-being. I'm like, these are parents that lost their children in this, and you're going to try to play a political and social agenda by trying to say this didn't happen, it was staged. I'm like, it's just unfathomable to me how people will try to exploit a tragedy or erase one to push a narrative, but you got people that will fall into it. What have you found in those observations, not necessarily studies, what have you found, Ryan, in terms of what you've observed with people who are easily misled like that? What is the one denominator that you have found?
Well, it's an interesting thing about, you know, talk about being easily misled, because what it really is, at least from what I can see, is like confirmation bias on steroids, really what it kind of comes down to. You've got an existing worldview, and you fit everything into that box. If it fits in the box, you use it. If it doesn't fit in the box, you ignore it, right? So if you come into the world with a very rigid, very specific perspective, then everything has to fit that. And, you know, it just depends upon whether or not you're doing that kind of as a subconscious filter, or if on the conscious level you're also, like, picking and filtering and, like, reinforcing that thing. So it kind of comes down to having a rigid belief system of some kind, whether that's conspiracy theories, whether that's a very religious person, whether it's a very political person. You know, there's really kind of no difference between Alex Jones and somebody's like one of these really big gender activists. You know, they're equally as married to a narrative, as equally, you know, hooked into and locked into a particular perspective. And it is such a powerful lens that they can't see the world in any other way. And so reality gets distorted for them. Reality, you know, either has to match it or they can't see it.
Yeah, and you know, we have to understand the world is a big place, and the view is not myopic. Mm-hmm. It's a panoramic realm, and it doesn't, and mm-hmm. it's not one way. Like when they talk about, you know, science fiction, they say reality is stranger than fiction, because at the end of a story you're yep. writing in science fiction or whatever, fiction has to make sense. Reality doesn't have to make sense.
Yep. Well, think about it this way. Think about how much humility you have to have. Think about how much humility you have to accept at the drop of a hat that you're wrong about everything you believed. You know, it takes a certain kind of person to say, I'm going to be that whatever reality shows me, even if it conflicts with what I expect and what I believe, I'm going to go with what's real first and then figure it out. Like, that's hard. That's really hard to do. I don't, like, most people can't do it. I can't do that. I've got my own biases and my own lenses through the world that I can't really move past. You know, it's, everybody does. And I think that the best that we can do is use that as a guiding principle to the extent that we can, that when our view of the world and what we see conflict, when we're, you know, the world doesn't measure up to what we think it should be, to have the humility to pause and say, okay, I'm not seeing what I expect. Is it possible that it's me that's wrong? And then sit back and say, okay, what has to be true for me to be seeing this result?
Right.
You know, if you've got the humility to just ask that question, it's like, okay, it shouldn't be this way. What has to be true for me to be seeing what I'm actually seeing? And if you've got that humility, you're going to do fine. Because even if you get something wrong, the world's going to show you, and then you're going to have the ability to course correct. But if you don't have the humility to sit back and say, I'm wrong, or I could be wrong, or what happens if I'm wrong, then you're going to have a hard time.
But then it also comes with that cognitive dissonance as well. You know, you can
yep.
be faced with, and you have still have people that will be faced with the truth and be proven wrong, and they will still swear up and down that they're right. You know, everybody else
right.
is crazy except them, you know, and that's, to me,
yep.
the arrogance and the recalcitrance of people who do not always understand that the thing is, it's not tailor fit. You know, ultimately, you know, there are a lot of truths in the... Go ahead.
It really comes down to something very simple. You know, I look at people that are sitting in that situation where they deny reality. It's like, okay, this is a person for whom their worldview is so hugely important to them and so hugely important to their continued survival and sanity that they would rather deny reality. It's actually less painful to deny reality than it would be to confront being wrong, than it would be to actually take a look at the parts of themselves that might not be what they like, you know? And I just have to look at those people and realize that they have to be in so much pain
right,
for that to be true.
Right.
You know, so you got to have sympathy. It sucks. And are they recalcitrant? And are they complete pain in the ass to deal with? And are they, you know, tragic? And do they cause a huge mess if they've got any kind of authority or power? Absolutely. Are they misled? Absolutely. Are they in pain? 100%. And my heart kind of goes out with them. But it's not my job to fix them. They have to get to a place on their own where they're willing to confront themselves and their pain before they're going to be able to confront reality. You know, you got to be able to look inside yourself first and face yourself first before you can figure out how to bring yourself more in conformity and more in alignment with the rest of the world.
Change comes from within, and
100%.
You know, and the thing is, change doesn't necessarily, you know, mean improvement, because you can change, but it doesn't mean you've improved. Improved is when you actually make a marked effort to modify and correct the things that may be holding you back at certain points. And for some people,
100%.
You know, you have to understand that at the end of the day, you know, you are responsible for you, you know, and that's what it is. You're responsible for what, you know, ultimately you are 100% in charge of your life, and it's nobody else's responsibility but your own to live it and deal with what comes in it. You know, when you first started out with this work,
Mm-hmm. What was the watershed moment for you that you knew, like, this was something, that this was your calling, and you knew this is what you were meant to do?
Man, that's a good question. I think it was, you know, all over that summer, 2020, you know, I was doing the work, doing the national security work at the same time, and I was doing this on the side. And, you know, I had spent so much time of my career, you know, basically trying to save the world. You know, doing all this work to create space for policymakers and bigger brains than I and people with more power and influence than I to actually make the world a better place, you know? With counterterrorism, trying to stop people from hurting people long enough for you to create some kind of peace. And I was doing all this work and I was realizing the world was not changing. Trying to save the world does not want to be saved. But every guy that I'm working with, all these different clients that are coming to me with these different problems, they want to change. They want to be better. They want their lives to be better. And I work with them, and I get to see that result. I'm not screaming into the wind. And so it became very clear to me very quickly that not only do I have a talent for kind of digging in and figuring out what people don't, you know, can't see on their own, what's not obvious to them, what's hidden. You know, I spent 23 years in intelligence figuring out stuff people didn't want me to know is what I did for 23 years. I'm really good at it. And just taking that same lens and putting it into the subconscious mind to figure out what's driving somebody, it's a very natural transition. It's a very, it's using the same talent in a different area. And so I had this natural gift for figuring out things that people, you know, that are not obvious. And I had these people that really wanted change and really wanted to live a better life and were motivated. And those two things together mean that these people live better lives. And I saw it happen quick, and I saw it happen so many times, and I said, this is what I'd rather be doing. This is far more rewarding than trying to save the world that doesn't want to be saved.
Wow. I mean, in terms of counterintelligence, what did you find from obviously we're not going to ask you to divulge any top secret stuff, but what did you find in terms of other countries, in terms of what goes on, in terms of how they view their, you know, when you look at the Middle East, when you look at Africa, when you look at Europe, you know, Russia, we look at stuff going on with Putin, you know, we look at the Ayatollah Khomeini, you know, all that, Osama bin Laden, what was going on before he was killed. What did you find in terms of the you know, if I can use the word Zetagist, you know, the paradigms, everything that was going on?
Man, that's a big question. I think one of the biggest differences between, you know, the United States, the West, and these other places in the world is there's a focus on the individual here in the United States that you don't necessarily see elsewhere. In other parts of the world, in the Middle East and, you know, especially, you know, Africa, these other areas, there's much more of a sense of some people are better than others, and there's a sort of like natural hierarchy. You know, there's just such a huge difference between the guys at the top and the guys at the bottom, and the difference is so stark, and the pyramid is so narrow, right? There's a whole lot of people at the bottom down there and a very few people at the top. And at least here in the West, you know, you've got the middle class. Success is distributed much more broadly. Even on the low end of the totem pole here in the U.S., people are still doing okay. You know, there's food on the table, they got TVs, they got phones, that kind of stuff, right? And so it's that huge differential between the haves and have-nots that I think really changes the way those societies work. And there's a huge amount of focus by the people on the top and making sure they stay on top. There's not nearly the same focus on making sure that the people below them have enough. There's much more of a sense of, you know, the people on top are right and benevolent dictators, and the people below them don't really know, aren't smart enough, aren't wise enough, whatever, to take care of themselves or know what they need. So we're just going to tell you what you should do. And those small things just change massively how these societies function. And it changes how they work on the world stage, and it changes how, you know, they interact with us and you know, the Western world, and kind of that great game, you know. And I think you're seeing that play out. If you're seeing these different philosophies clashing in some really big ways over the past several years. You know, you're seeing that, you know, play out in like Ukraine and the Middle East and power struggles in Africa, all the developmental stuff in Central America and South America, you know, all the economic war we're doing with China. It's a huge mess. And I think we're just, you know, the thing that kind of bothers me is how at least here in the Western United States, like how far we've moved away from, you know, the values and principles that we really used to hold dear. You know, that's no longer mom, baseball, and apple pie anymore. We don't have that same sense of national identity we had even 20 years ago. You know, if you look back at the national unity we had after 9/11 compared to what things look like, you know, domestically today, night and day.
Yeah.
Night and day. The fragmentation and just the disintegration of the stories that used to hold us together. You know, it used to be America was one nation. It used to be one dream. It used to be a unified story of who we were. And now we're focusing so much on the little things that divide us that there is no story. You know, it's a story of like how finely can we divide ourselves? How much can we fragment ourselves? How much can we put each other at each other's throats? And it's tragic. I think we've lost our way as a nation, and it's been happening for a good 10 plus years now. And I think it's tragic.
It's very heartbreaking to watch, man. Like, it's very heartbreaking to see. Like, I seen a meme, I think it was, like, around Thanksgiving. I think it was Thanksgiving. It was a Thanksgiving meme that they had. And they just show how family values have changed. Like, they show how family was in 1985, where you had everybody mingling together, talking, sharing food and stuff like that. Then they show 2023, everybody is on their gadgets. Nobody's speaking. Nobody's talking. Nothing.
Yeah. We've lost our way in some really, really big ways. Like I say, and like earlier, it's like there's nobody focusing on real human connection anymore. There's no recognition that that's even valuable anymore, almost. You know?
Yeah.
And I don't know where we lost our way. I don't know how to get back to it, but like I keep coming back to it. Like the reality, the real is so hugely important. And the closer you can get to it, the closer you can focus on it, the better your life is. You know, people who can authentically connect, that have those support systems, that are still connected with the family, that do have deep friend networks, do better in every way, you know, because they're focusing on the things that are real. And, man, I don't know how we get people back. But one thing that I'll say is that I've kind of stopped trying to figure out how to do those big questions. I'm done worrying about how to save the world. I'm not going to try and figure out how to get the nation back on track. I just want to help people who know that they want to help themselves. You know, they have to ask for the help. They have to want that help. They have to be willing to ask that question. I don't see the nation asking itself, how do we get back to the way things were? I don't see the nation and our people and our culture asking, how do we get back? You know, those questions are starting to bubble up. But we're not really taking it serious yet.
Yeah, it kind of looks like it's kind of like how, you know, if you really look at, you know, the Avengers and you look at movies like that, how it parallels how the modern society is shaping up. Like,
yep.
When they say the end game, I wonder what they mean by that. Like, the end game, as in where society is heading, is that part of the end game? Because you start really seeing a lot of this surface. Like, you see all, just like in the movie, in the Avengers movie, you see all this surfacing. And it parallels with today. It's like, what kind of end game are they talking about? There's different perils of what they're talking about.
Yeah.
It's something I got
to think that's where you start.
Analyze.
Yeah, well, I think if you're like asking what the end game is, you know, that's where you need to start talking to guys like Alex Jones, because I don't know. I think that, you know, There's this. One of the things about conspiracy theories that always got me is people really want for things to be controlled, for there to be an actor, for there to be something driving this, for it to be happening on purpose. You know,
right?
It'd be so much more comfortable if our society was falling apart because there's an evil super genius pushing buttons to make us dependent on
realize
devices and stuff
evil.
Like that. Yeah, I realize that. I mean, that would make things easier because then you defeat Dr. Evil and things go back the way they were. And I think that we have to, you know, one of the things we have to realize is that this is just kind of like the natural result of reckless technological development and just emergent behavior. You know, there's nobody driving the bus to make things the way they are. It's just kind of happening naturally. It's just kind of a natural consequence of the stuff that we've built and the technologies we've created and the way that they were put together. And so I don't know that there is an end game. I don't think there's a plan. I think this is just how things are falling apart because we just like set, you know, we rolled the dice and set some things in motion that we didn't understand. And so if you want to figure out where things are going, I think you really need to start taking a look at what are the incentives that are driving how this stuff got created. And I think that at least nowadays there's a recognition of how much damage we've done to ourselves by being reckless with these technologies, by being reckless with social media, by being reckless with our national story, you know, by losing that national identity. I think we're finally waking up to the fact that things have gone too far. We just like let chaos reign. And so I think you're starting to see a movement or a resurgence, or the questions at least are being asked of how do we get to be a little bit more deliberate about this? And the problem, I think, is, you know, the people who have the power are looking at it in terms of, okay, we need to control this. You know, the censorship and all that other stuff, you know. I think it's fascinating to see, like, you know, the difference after Elon Musk bought Twitter and, you know, the whole dedication he has to free speech and how the entire power structure, every, you know, all the powers of B kind of lost their mind because of it, you know. And where this ends up, I don't know. I'm going to take a smarter guy than me to figure that one out. But I think it's like one of these things that it kind of has to play itself out naturally. But I think people are waking up to how things have fallen apart and how much chaos there is and how far we've lost our way, and recognizing just like we've lost our collective minds in a lot of ways. And people are starting to try and grapple with what reality is so we can find our way back to something that's healthier and more grounded. I think that's playing out. I hope it plays itself out quick because I don't know, you know, how much longer we can descend into insanity like we are. But I also, you know, there's a quote by Winston Churchill that I always loved. And I have faith in humanity because of it. He said, "Americans can always be counted on to do the right thing after they've exhausted every other option." And I think we're still like running ourselves out of options. But once, you know, I think we're at the end of our rope. We've already done everything else, and so we're going to get back to doing the right thing. But I think it's going to be a messy process.
Yeah, like you said, Ryan, there's no simplistic answer to it. You know, we look at social media playing such a big part in it. We're not going to be those angry old men, grumpy old men yelling at the sky about social media, because social media is what helps us to do this show, interview people like yourself and, you know, incredible individuals. Social media, when used responsibly, is a great thing. And it's also what, you know, the term is, you know, unplugging from the matrix. But you also have to know when to make time for real life. You know, King and myself, we have a life outside of, you know, this show, which we love doing. You know, we, you know, he's in North Carolina, I'm in Virginia, you know, we're brothers from another, you know, and, you know, we have, our, but we have our friends we talk to, we have interests outside of this, we do things, and I like, and the key word in all of this I'm trying to get to is balance. You have to have a balance. You know, you can have a person who reads all day that is prolific in all types of literary prowess and academics, but if they don't know how to interact with people in a meaningful way, what good are the books if you can't read the pages of human life and enjoy the illustrations that line it? You know?
Yes.
You know, what is it if you're an athlete but you're so consumed with being driven that you don't know how to make time for, you know, understanding that it's going to end one day and you need to have something else to do, what's the key to smoking all day? And we're not against weed at all, but, you know, let us preface this. But the thing is with weed, we don't kill you, but weed will slow you down. it makes you really not want to do nothing. And it's like, what's the purpose of getting a high, but you can't get a high out of life? Right. You know, these are the questions. And at the end of the day, we want people to understand about life. It's a beautiful thing. And at the end of the day, don't let the world get you down in terms of the negativity and the badness that goes in it.
understand what you have to offer and be the light in it, that if nothing else, you can at least be your own motivation, your own, you know, your own inspiration, and by proxy, you're able to pass that on to other people who really need it. You know,
Well, I'll tell you something. Like, this point you're making about, you know, you have to be able to get, you know, joy and pleasure out of life in a lot of different ways. There's a lot of people for that's really hard. It's really hard to find the joy in their life because for whatever reason their lives are hard in some way, shape, or form. Like, you know, for me, I've got a tattoo on my chest that says I am alive. And the date is July 29th, 2021. Because that was the first day in my life where I truly believed that actually life was really worth living. You know, up to that point, you know, it had been really hard for me to get what I needed in life. You know, life wasn't full of joy. The moments of pleasure, the moments of joy were very fleeting. And it wasn't until, you know, I did a lot of work on myself that I finally got to that point where it's like, no, like, life is worth it. And once you're there, it's a beautiful thing, but it's a struggle to get there. And I understand why people would rather spend all day on the phone. If real life sucks, getting away from real life makes a lot of sense. You know, but... You know, like I said, reality has a way of catching up to you. You can't hide from it forever, no matter what you're doing, whether that's video games, whether that's social media, whether that's weed, whether that's something else. You know, you can't stay away from it forever. And there is so much beauty and so much joy in the world once you get to a place where you can allow yourself to see it and allow yourself to have it. And life truly is an amazing, beautiful thing. When you get yourself to the place where you can actually let yourself experience it and be part of it and be authentically, you know, one with the rest of the world.
And that's, man, as we wind down, Ryan, this is one of the greatest shows we have ever done. We do hip hop. We, you know, primarily, but we're not just a hip hop show. We also love to do human interest stories like this as well. And people like yourself show there are truly incredible, inspirational people in the world who have not only found that light within themselves, but are so gracious and generous to let it shine for other people who may be in a dark place. We have thoroughly enjoyed this. Your humor, your enlightenment, your wisdom, your friendship, we are so humble. We are so grateful to have had you on the show. You're welcome back anytime. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much for taking your time to give us yours, and we really appreciate you. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate this opportunity. It was an absolute pleasure to be on your show. I love how much you guys care about, you know, about hip-hop, about athletics, about the people out there. You know, it's amazing to see. You know, you guys ask wonderful questions. It's clear you guys' heart is in the right place, and I would love to come back anytime you'll have me.
Absolutely. You know, like I said, man, we need more people like you in the world, and we want to spread it. You know, we'll definitely have it on YouTube for those listening out there. You know, King will have it up on, you know, Blog Talk, and momentarily. And, you know, for everybody out there, like Ryan said, life is worth living once you find that purpose. And even if you don't find it right away, know something is out there for you. Don't walk in anybody else's shoes because they're not tailor fit for you. You blaze your own path. You forge your own trail. You triumph tremendously because of what you endeavor from your experiences, not from what somebody tries to tell you it needs to be. The world is out there. Carpe diem for everybody out there.
Carpe diem.
Thank you. Thank you again, Ryan. King, take us out of here.
Yeah, we definitely thank you for joining us, man. We definitely appreciate you for being a part of the archives. You're definitely welcome to us to do a part two. We're going to definitely be back next week. We're going to have episode 600. We're winding down on it, man. We got two shows away. I'm going to set up a big celebration. I'm going to keep y'all tuned with the date and how we're going to do this because this is going to be a major, major extravagant event. So, thank you once again, Ryan, for joining us, and we will be back next week.
Peace.
Peace.